Woeville for the Royals as they fail to beat eight-man Yeovil at home. Is this the true end of our playoff dreams, or is this just a blip on our blissful road to Wembley? We try and answer that and much more on the Tyler Sten podcast, episode number 25. My name's Dan Wimbush. I'm the editor of thetylersten.com and also known as Wimb. I'm joined, as ever, by Mr. Alan West, otherwise known as Westy. Westy, hello.
Woeville, very good. I like that. Nice. Yes.
I've unashamedly stolen that from our Twitter followers, who I asked them to suggest a headline for our match report for the Yeovil game, and a lot of them came up with that. The man who didn't use that is Mr. Johnny Williams. He wrote our match report, and he joins us again on the podcast after missing last week through injury. Johnny, welcome back.
Thank you very much. It's good to be back, and it does seem that I'm back for a good episode, shall we say.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, plenty to get through on this one. Reading draw 1-1 at home to Yeovil. As we mentioned, down to eight men by the end, although they played about 70 minutes with 11. Reading falling behind once again at home through a bit of a calamitous bit of defending. And as you wrote last week, Johnny, and clearly pointed out, Reading once again can't win when they fall behind.
It's just unbelievable. It's just... when you see these sorts of stats, and you know, obviously people can say stats mean nothing or stats can tell you everything. And the simple fact was we'd won one game when we'd conceded the first goal, and that was the first game of the season against Ipswich. Since then, every time we've gone behind, we've got a draw against Forest, and that was in the 90th minute, Stephen Kelly with pretty much the last, head of the game, and second game of the season against Bolton. Where we were away and we scored a penalty in the 75th minute, it was. Aside from then, every game where we conceded the first goal, we've lost. Because teams just sit back, say, come and have a go. Yeah. And we do. And, you know, we're not hard enough and not good enough.
The problem is, with the last two home games, teams have come in, sat in, got a goal on the break or with a bit of luck. And they sat in the rest of the game. And Reading have got absolutely no idea how to break a team down when they sit in like that. And even with eight men, Reading didn't really look like scoring, let's face it. No. The only reason they did score is because Yeovil put it in their own net.
Yeah, and I've labelled this the most brainless performance I've ever seen from a Reading team, because it's frighteningly obvious if you're sat there watching it. Okay, we're lumping long balls in and their massive centre-backs are heading them away. Start playing it along the deck and start pulling them apart. That's the difference between higher league players and lower league players. They've got that bit of technical nous. Reading, on the other hand, don't seem to have that ability. And John Keane wrote on the website this week about, did Reading have enough smarts to get promoted? And on the basis of that performance, no.
Clearly not, no.
No, and I question Atkins' substitution as well, because he took off Kasper's Gorks, who, let's be honest, is probably one of our best headers of the ball, and put on Nick Blackman, who I don't think pretty much had a touch in the whole sort of 10, 15 minutes he was on.
No.
If we're going to continue...
got booked, though.
Persist, well, yeah.
When he was, only contribution.
Yeah. If we're going to persist with pumping the ball into the box and repeating that and seeing it fail over again and still doing it.
Might as well put Gorks up front.
Yeah, exactly. Gorks and Pierce up front. Stick Gunter and, you know, someone else sort of pacey at the back and see what happens that way, because otherwise you're not gonna win a header, and we didn't win a header, and it was brainless.
I think my question about the whole thing was, could the gods of football done any more to help Reading to win that game?
No.
The answer is no, and we still couldn't win it. Against eight men. I said to my dad in the stand, I said, I could have got 11 blokes from the pub and we'd have scored in 15 minutes against eight men. They were just absolutely inept and brainless. I think the only thing you can say about it is, at least when Guthrie and Drenta come on, they made a difference. And that made a nice change, because they haven't done it too often off the bench. But anything was, I thought, again, when Guthrie come on, Williams disappeared out of the game completely.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to have a great partnership with him. I mean, to be fair, I mean, they were only down to eight men for the last couple of minutes, and I think about another 10 minutes.
7 minutes of injury time.
Yeah. But even so, it wasn't like it was eight men for 20 minutes. But that's, I'm being overly generous.
It was still 10 men for 35 minutes.
Exactly.
Nine men for about 25 minutes. Eight men for about 10 minutes.
And not forgetting the bottom of the league. And their wage bill is nothing compared to Reading. Not even close.
No, absolutely. And as you mentioned, Reading have been, we've been begging for a bit of good fortune from the referee. And we get a soft penalty that Yeovil have successfully appealed. So that's, what, 2 in 3 weeks now that at the Medeski Stadium.
Yeah.
Where a referee's got it spectacularly wrong. And again, get a penalty and miss it.
I think the worst thing about that was Lafondre, and we talk about his goal-scoring prowess. I mean, just before that penalty, he had a gilt-edged chance that he booted over the bar. Then he took the penalty and missed it, and then he claimed a goal that, let's face it, the mate, he had four touches and put it in his own net.
Yeah.
So, and even Paul Grzebniak on the day, they had chances fall to him. I mean, the strikers can't say they didn't have opportunities, because plenty of balls into the box they could have got on the end of. And when they did have gilt-edged chances, they both missed them.
Why is it then that Reading are just resorting to this pumping the ball tactic? Is this, do you think this is the players just reverting to type? Is it something they've been coached? Is it Adkins just can't get through to the players? Or is it just they're a bit brainless when it comes to on-field decisions?
The thing we always said is the reason you put two up top is because you can play it around and they can, you know, pass it to each other, make runs. And for whatever reason, we're not doing that. And we weren't even getting to the byline and crossing. Drenton, when he came on, was sort of crossing from, you'd say, sort of like the edge of the penalty area and further back. You know, it was very much so sort of, you know, almost like a free kick when you get it sort of, you know, 30 yards out on the wing. It's not like we're getting to the byline and, you know, dribbling it around them. And ironically, the you know, the goal did come from a short corner where we sort of tapped it into Lafondre sort of around the corner. And that was a run off the ball. And when you've got 11 men against eight, even if they're in a line or in two banks of three.
They're basically sat in their box.
Yeah, exactly. But there's still going to be space there.
Yeah, there should
be. Still, you know, because you've got 11 and they've got eight and the numerical advantage is with you. So I've got no explanation for it, to be honest.
I think one thing that summed it up to me about Reading's ineptitude was right at the end of the game. I think we had about 5 minutes left and we was about 30 yards out with a free kick and someone had a shot. I can't remember what it was. It might have been Drenter. He's had a shot and I thought, they had three in a wall. We must have had five.
I think
in
it was Guthrie smashing miles over the bar. Yeah.
Completely unmarked. They couldn't have been marked because they didn't have enough players on the pitch to mark them. So it just, why are you shooting from there?
Yeah.
Why are you shooting from there?
I mean, if I'm going to give credit, I have to give credit to Yeovil because they did defend doggedly. They deserved that result because, as we talked about last week, up at Yeovil, Reading were bad and probably didn't deserve to win that game. So credit to them. They battled and their fans were loud throughout. Mm. And they were worthy of a point. In fact, they probably would have argued they deserved all three, again, had they not got a bit of a harsh red card.
That's two controversial penalties in two games with Yeovil, so...
Yeah, it was, and it happens to the teams down the bottom. We've said this before. Mm. But what disappointed me, again, was there was no Mackenough in the side, and Al Robson-Kanu got his opportunity, and again, he failed to produce against the teams bottom of the league. And everyone's raved about how great he was in the Premier League over, what, six or seven matches. Mm. But we said off-air just a minute ago, what has he done this season to warrant his inclusion? And when he does get his chance, he puts in a performance like that.
Yeah, to be fair, you do need... I can understand players needing a run of games to get into form, but... Yeah. You've still got to show something, especially against a team like Yeovil, who aren't the best technically in the world. And they had lost their... Didn't they lose their right back, McAllister? Didn't they lose him injured as well, their captain? Injured what? First half?
Yeah.
Oh, he wasn't playing right back, was he? And that was ailing. But they still lost their skipper as well, and even then we still couldn't beat him.
Mm. And there was a division between them players last year. You know what I mean? They should be better than that, and they should be able to break down a side that, let's face it, will be in League One probably next year and were the year before that.
So, I mean, you're talking about a division between players, and their striker, I think, is Killian Moore, the guy who got the third red card for Yeovil. He was playing for Dorchester Town last year in the Isthmian South League or whatever. He completely dominated Gawkes and Pearce.
Yeah, so he looked decent in the air. He certainly bullied them around.
You know, he's 6'5", but he won just about every header. I mean, there were times like when Gawkes would try and chest it down to himself and this Moore guy would just, you know, push him off the ball. And then you had James Hayter, who's sort of a consistent, you know, this level or slightly below striker. He's got a bit of pace. And I think this game sort of typified power and pace completely worry Gawkes and Pearce. And this Killian, you'd have thought he was a, you know, sort of a star in waiting for Man U or Arsenal.
We talk about pace worrying though, but the goal was about as route one as you're going to get. And I'm afraid Alex McCarthy has to take a lot of blame for this because he comes charging out.
He's the only person who can...
Comes charging out of his goal for a ball he's never going to win. And it's a soft looping header that if McCarthy stays on his goal line, he picks up all day long.
He's made a few mistakes recently, actually, Alex McCarthy. If you look at a couple of the goals over the last month or so, they've either been spilled by him or that one on Saturday was bad goalkeeping, full stop. There's no reason for him to come out that far. And when he did, he's got to get it, and he didn't get anywhere near it.
There's been some suggestions that maybe it's time for Adam Federici to come back. Would you support that?
It's funny with goalkeepers because it seems that a goalkeeper can have three or four bad matches and everyone turns a blind eye to it because he's a goalkeeper. But if a right back made four or five mistakes in four or five games, then they'd have him out the side. I'm not sure it's time for a new goalkeeper. I'm not saying Alex McCarthy's been to blame for the results because he's made some good saves as well. But he's just made there's been a few incidents recently where his mistakes have cost us goals. But he's a young goalkeeper and people forget.
Yeah, and do you not think though, Johnny, that Adam Federici, who's been training hard, has been... You haven't really heard a peep from him of discourse. You haven't seen him on any Instagram instance or anything this season. Working hard. He's got World Cup ambitions. He's a proven goalkeeper at this level and has played in the Premier League. Is it not possibly time for him to come back?
Well, sorry, John, I didn't want to jump on in there, but if you're going to play long ball football, you might as well put him in goal. If you're going to boot it long, then you might as well have Federici in goal because you know his kicking's very good. He's probably the best passer in the side. He is.
Our third choice striker as well.
Yeah, he probably is.
Yeah, his distribution is good, but the whole, he sort of spins the ball and then kicks it sort of a 90-degree angle, doesn't he? But I think we're in a privileged position in that we've got two keepers who are good enough at this level. I don't think there are many teams who have that sort of... That strength in depth where you can just sort of, you know, decide that McCarthy's not the flavour of the month and bring in Federici. The thing I would say with Federici is when he had his chance in the Premier League, I mean... We came on here, we were almost talking about his mistake every week. He always made one mistake. When he was against Chelsea, I think he, to Ivanovic, and, you know, ball bounced right in front of me, let it in from about 30 yards. And, you know, he made two or three of those in a row, and that was what led to him being dropped for McCarthy. I think Federici, has he learnt from those mistakes? Has he sort of grown up a bit? Well, is he going to learn from the experience of being on the bench? Or has it just... It's not the sort of thing that you know until he comes back in and you see how he performs, whether he's going to be better for that or whether he's just sort of, you know, completely tools.
I don't think that he's... I mean, he has played a few times this season, and generally when he has played, he's been one of our better players. In that 6-0 mauling at Peterborough, he was our best player. He stopped it being 10. He played against Brighton away in the FA Cup, had a really good game as well, and he had a couple of league games as well where I think Reading either didn't lose or they drew and played okay. And he's not got the potential of Alex McCarthy. We've sat here week after week and said how Alex McCarthy's kept Reading in games and is the only reason they're as high as they are.
Going to Brazil, possibly.
Well, possibly, I don't think anymore.
No.
But the truth is he has had a bad month, and you have got this highly paid, experienced goalkeeper on the bench. And do you take McCarthy out of the firing line for a bit? And, as I said, reward a hard-training goalkeeper, because if you're Federici, you're going to start saying to your allies in the dressing room, aren't you? Oh, well, this I was dropped for far less than this. And I've been training hard, working hard. The other guy's making mistakes. I'm still not in the team. What have I got to do? And that can be bad for dressing room. Sometimes you've got to say to people, yeah, you've worked hard, you deserve your chance. I'm going to rest this guy. Show me what you can do. Federici has a stinker. Again, you change it.
I don't think it's as simple as that, though, because you've always got to look towards the future. And I think both these keepers, you know, their contracts expire, what, end of next season?
Yeah.
So, I mean, well, I know we're not offering any contracts at the moment, but I think to an extent you've got to stick with one of those, because almost certainly one of them is going to be off this summer. So, you know, you've got to look to the future, and you've got to look to which one can we perhaps, you know, which one would be happier to sell for a certain amount of money, and which one would we want to keep on at the club, because Stuart Taylor's a decent enough backup.
It'd be McCarthy to get sold, wouldn't it? That's where the money is, and Federici would probably get a new contract. That's the way that'll work out.
Well, that's just it. And even if you want to sell Federici, you're going to be in a much better position to sell him if you say, well, look at the last 10 games he's had in the Championship season. He's a good goalkeeper. Mm. Let's get his big contract off the book. So there's both sides. I'm not sure if you do make a change, but I can absolutely see the reason why Nigel Adkins would. Other selection issues, obviously, we mentioned substitutes, Drenter and Guthrie. Time for them both to come in and have a start?
I think they will. I think they will after this week, because I don't think, again, Akpan had a particularly good game. He looks sometimes a little bit lost when he had the ball, and that's one of our criticisms of him. We can't knock his work ethic, but sometimes his ball play has been poor. And I think Guthrie will come back in now. I think it's the excuse that Atkins have to put him back in the side. And again, I thought when he came on, at least he tried to get involved in the play. He did try and direct the football for us, which we were struggling with before that.
The thing is, we said that the Sheffield Wednesday result would be the excuse for him to bring them back, and he didn't do it after that. And I think going away to Brighton, who are a very sort of possession-based side, and, you know, they almost, you know, probe you and do what we tried to do in the early starts of the season, where it is a lot about concentration and just keeping to your man. I don't think Guthrie would suit that game, nor do I think Drenter would suit that game. I think we might see them come in at Leeds, where it's likely to be a more open game, sort of 4-4-2 against 4-4-2. But I think against Brighton, it would be the wrong decision to bring them back, because, you've got to give the players one more chance, I think. As much as we have completely lambasted them for a quite horrible performance, I don't think Guthrie and Drenter are the answer to... Certainly to Brighton. I think you've got to, you know, horses for courses, you've got to play the team that's going to...
The only thing I would say then is, if that's the case, then does Hal Robson and Carney get to start again, even though he's had another poor performance or average performance?
Well, Toby McAduff might also come back into the reckoning as well.
Again, I thought he played poorly over the last couple of weeks.
So, if McAduff's back from injury, then I'd certainly bring him back, but...
I think, really, we spoke about Drenter quite a lot. Everyone knows my thoughts on him, but at least he can... At least he's something a little bit different, and I thought when he come on, at least he looked like he was interested. But you never know; you go away from home, and he might put in another performance. You know what I mean? He should, again. Drenter should be playing every week because he's got the pedigree; he just hasn't got the professionalism.
His morale seems to be, again, you can only go on so much on social media, but he just seems to be in a better place by his like posts and stuff recently. Like he put a picture up today of him in a Reading kit and a smiley face and stuff like that. And he just seems to, again, feel a bit loved. I don't know whether Adkins has put his arm around him again when the transfer window shut, like he did with Pog. Because you remember, Pog's early season performances were dire. Pog, and we officially got off the Pog bandwagon.
We did.
And we officially got off the Trentham bandwagon.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe Adkins has put his arm around him and says, look, I really need you for the rest of the season. I'm going to ease you back in. And then I really want you to show me what
I
can do.
I think if he plays, you have to play him up front with Pog Rebnett and give him a free role, let him run around, do what he wants, because I don't think you can trust him to defend. So if you're going to do that, and you'd have to drop Lafondre then. So that's what would probably happen, if anything's going to happen.
It was quite funny seeing Drenthe in the warm-up. I specifically watched him in the warm-ups. And right before they come into before they come into the dressing room, just before they come out onto the pitch to start the match, they do sort of jump up and sprint out and, you know, basically get all the muscles going. Drenthe would jump about a millimetre off the air and then just sort of gently jog away while all the other ones are going hell for leather. So clearly he's just
protecting his legs.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. He's protecting the little energy he's got.
He does have a habit as well, if you watch him before kickoff, of trying to showboat and it balls from miles out of goal, and most of them tend to miss.
I do think Johnny makes a good point though. The thought of Drenthe and Obita on the left does scare you a bit, because there isn't a cover. Yeah.
Unless we're struggling, that won't happen. Unless it's with one down or two down or 20 minutes ago. I think if he's going to play him, he'd give him a free roll. And that means Lafondre won't.
Yeah. And I sent an email by someone looking for a contribution for the Leeds programme. And one of the questions was, what system do you expect Nigel Adkins to play? And I said, I've got absolutely no idea, because he might completely tear it up. And we might see him completely abandon 4-4-2 and go back to 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3 or something. He could do anything, because if he does want to bring in a Drenthe or a Guthrie, he's not going to be able to play that 4-4-2.
He needs to accommodate him, yeah, that's definitely right. And again, we've got a lot of options all of a sudden, because everyone's coming back from injury. So they can change the system if they want to. Whether they will or not, is only time will tell.
Well, so we are going to probably rotate the squad, because you've got Brighton away on Saturday and the Leeds away on Tuesday, is it? So, you know, I mean, two games in 4 days, you are going to see a little bit of rotation. As I say, I think we will go more defensively to Brighton. I think we might go 4-4-2 against Leeds and go a bit more attacking and try and counter-attack them. So, it will be interesting to see what Adkins does over the next couple of games.
And annoyingly, you can see Reading go and win both games in the
free. Yeah. I mean, we go away to QPR and win, and then
one at Derby.
Yeah. I think the difference is when they're away, teams don't sit in against them. Yeah. And it gives Reading more opportunity to get forward. I mean, I think teams have learnt now that a couple have took a hammer in here, and I think, well, we're sitting and see what happens. And on both occasions, like I said earlier, Blackburn and Yeovil got goals against the run of play, a little bit fluky, and then it just held it for the rest of the match and had no idea.
And that's exactly how Brian McDermott's team went up, didn't they? Because if you remember a lot of that, and we've said this before on this show, remember a lot of those games, thinking back to them, it was only because they had a really solid back seven.
Yeah.
Federici was on top of his game. They had Gawkes and Pearce were brilliant. They had Carachan and Ledgerwood doing a great job covering the two of them in front. And they had the full-backs were a little bit patchy with Hart and whoever happened, the right back of the week, where it was Cummings, Connolly, Griffin, whoever. Mm. But that was such a solid unit that, you know, they would keep teams out, and then they'd go at the other end and they'd get a Roberts or a Kebbe or whatnot.
Well, then you had Roberts and Kebbe who were match winners, and you had Roberts to hold the ball, which we haven't got at a minute, and that's, again, something we're lacking.
So, it's going to start from the back. So, again, just one final thing, Michael Hector, possibly time for him.
I don't see why not. I can't see him being any worse than them two.
I think we might see him sort of last five games of the season if the slump continues.
If it's over.
Yeah, if it's over. As I said a couple of weeks ago, I think Adkins is going to keep the side together as much as possible until he finds out whether we are playoff bound or not.
But Morrison's back soon as well, isn't he?
Yeah.
In full training this week or coming up, so he'll be fit in 2 weeks or so.
Any news on Bridge?
We said on the podcast extra on Fridays, back in doing training. So hopefully a couple of weeks and he'll be in contention. But unfortunately, it's not really an area we need. But we'll talk a little bit more about that in News Bites, which is coming up just after this sting.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Right, welcome back to News Bites. Just a quick roundup of little bits of news, bits of bobs around the club this week. As we mentioned in our little talk on Yeovil, a little bit of injury news. Sean Morrison has told Get Reading that he hopes to be back in training by the end of the week. So it's still going to be a while before he's up to match fitness, but he's targeting the end of March, which will be handy, because we've mentioned that centre of defence isn't looking as strong as we'd hoped. Michael Hector's in contention. Pearce and Gawkes are both doing okay. I don't think either have been terrible, but they've certainly not been brilliant this season. And Sean Morrison, certainly with a long-term contract, one of the few at the club now. Future club captain, isn't he, really?
Well, he is. And I thought, again, I've said about Morrison quite a few times, that for his rise of, well, the rise in his career, I think sometimes we expect a little bit too much for him because he never even played in the Championship before and ended up in the Premier League. I think he's a good player. I like him. He's got all the attributes to be a good centre-back. And like you said, I think he will be the captain before long.
I think, honestly, we could start next season with Morrison and Hector at centre-back because, you know, Pearce just hasn't looked the same since the whole contract debate of 2 years ago. Gorks has looked solid sort of November, December time, but just now he's starting to sort of lose that bit of pace and almost lose his head a little bit. You know, almost literally with the QPR sending off, which did get rescinded, and I thought it should have been. But as we said just now, I think Hector will get a chance at some point during the coming couple of months, and Morrison, he's my first choice centre back, and probably will be for the next year or so.
Yeah, the facility.
Just on the captaincy, were you surprised to see Chris Gunn to take the armband?
Don't know who else would.
No, it seems to be dished out.
Well, it's usually Gorks and Pearce, I think, have both had the armbands at bits this season. But I thought it was just...
Maybe something to do with St. David today as well, because that was on Saturday.
With all due respect to David.
Yeah. Well, we must have had about five captains. Maybe five or six captains.
Guthrie, Morrison, McEnough. I said Gorks has worn it for a bit.
Yeah, it's got to be at least four or five.
I think Pearce took it for about 10 minutes in a game once.
Does that tell you there's loads of leaders? Or tell you
There's none. No standout leaders.
I'll be fair, I didn't think Gunter had a particularly terrible game. I didn't think he had a great game.
Gunter's been steady all season, to be fair to him. And if someone had said to me, I'd have said at this point in the season, Gorks is our best centre-back over the course of the season, I would have been surprised. But although I don't like him particularly, it probably shows you how bad the rest of them have been, because he has been our best centre-back.
Well, speaking of centre-backs and Hector and looking at the future, great win for Reading's under 21 side this week. They went up to Anfield and won. It was on LFC TV. Don't know if either of you two gents managed to catch that. I watched most of it, had to go out. And Reading were really impressive. We talk about hoofball from the seniors, anything but from the under 21s, who played it around, sometimes a little bit too casually. That's how they conceded their goal.
But did they go 1-0 down?
Then
you would have seen the hoofball.
And they won 2-1. Big Heck grabbing one of the goals as well. And the performance of Tanner is one that everybody's been raving about this week. And we've got a couple of questions in the inbox that we'll come on to a bit later on. But great to see the under-21s winning. And that can only breed confidence going forward.
It's interesting, though, because most clubs have a philosophy that they take all the way through to the senior team, don't they? But if you're saying, and I didn't see the game, if you're saying that, and I've seen under-21s before and they've played very good football, if you're saying that they're playing good football, then is it a long-term project that we'll end up being a footballing side? Or, from what I heard, some of the players said, can we go back to a more direct football? And Atkins said, okay, well, and we'll see how it goes. So that's what I was told from inside the club more recently, that they've decided to go back as a squad to a more direct style of football. Because it's changed absolutely completely from a team that overpassed it too much to a team that now hardly passed it at all.
I think it was desperation, isn't it? And I think the whole ownership situation, which, again, we're going to have to mention, is playing a part, because they are desperate to get promoted by any means necessary. Because otherwise, financially, and we talked about this last week, didn't we?
Yeah,
contracts
worry.
And things like that. It's a big worry. And I think almost they're prepared to put the project on hold for this season, just saying, get us up whatever way you can, then we'll worry about changing it. Because they didn't want to completely abandon the season. Because let's be honest, at Christmas, we'd written the season off completely. But I wouldn't have even thought we'd be talking about a sniff of playoffs.
No.
It was only because they changed it, went back and got a couple of good results.
But the ironic thing is, throughout that whole time, we were in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And the whole time we were saying we're not going to make the playoffs. Now we're in sort of 7th or 8th, and you know, suddenly we've had two bad results, and suddenly we're not going to make the playoffs.
Now anyone can still make the playoffs. I did say earlier in the season I thought Wigan would fly up there, but again, it's only a couple of results. If we go away to Brighton and Leeds, get 4 points, we'll probably be happy with that and be back in the playoffs.
Yeah, but that's my point. You know, the whole time we were certainly no lower than 7th, but for most of that time we were still in the top 6, despite the fact that we weren't playing well, we weren't perhaps getting the results that we expected or wanted.
It's only more consistent more recently.
But now we're consistent and being inconsistent, aren't we? So, same old Reading.
But getting back to the youth team, it was a good result. And they have got some good players. And I think, again, if we stay in this league next year, you might see quite a few of them playing regularly.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see how this under-21 Premier League is having an effect on how youngsters are developed. Because I write the Loan Watch every week. And Reading haven't actually sent a lot of players out on loan this season. And I do wonder if that is because now they are getting the experience of playing these bigger youth teams and going and getting to play in proper stadiums and things, and whether they're thinking, well, actually,
what's the point?
Do we want to send them out to Notts County where they might play, might pick up bad habits and stuff? So it'll be interesting because, I mean, we've been saying all season that these players generally tend to go out on loan and then come back, but a lot of these players even haven't been out at all.
But the thing is, we're playing a lot of bigger teams, and I don't know this for certain, but I'd imagine that the bigger teams still are the types that do send their players out on loan. So, you know, we're not sending our players out on loan, so we've got a decent squad down there, but I'm not sure how that would compare to, say, Liverpool squad, the Arsenal squad that we're playing. You know, whether they've sent most of their, you know, their best sort of under-21s out on loan, so we're just playing, you know, the chaff, so to speak.
Or is it a new golden generation?
It could be.
Like Saran Koo were very impressive, and obviously Hector
looked good.
Keeper Dan Lincoln looked excellent. Again, Reading just seems to have an absolute conveyor belt of goalkeepers. Mm. Credit to Sal Bibbo and anyone who's recruiting them, because they just churn them out. They've got another lad who's out alone, I think, at Gloucester City as well, Simon Moore.
John Henley as well.
John Henley's just got a call up to the Scotland under 21 squad. Just as
Mikael Anderson's out.
Yeah, Mikael Anderson. Conveyor belt of good goalkeepers. If only we could play like more than one. Maybe that's a tactic. Maybe Reading just needs to do
two in goal, one up front.
Indeed, you used to play that on playground all the time. Rush goalkeeper.
It's fine. Like the skeleton goalie. Yeah.
Exactly, love it. But yeah, great stuff. As I said, it is unfortunate. We don't want to get carried away. It is a big jump up from under 21s to the real team. But as I said, we'll talk a little bit more about this in the emails, but it's certainly very good to see. Other little bits and bobs of news. Takeover news. There isn't any. Mm. We had a chat on the podcast Extra on Friday with Charles, and he said that basically the fact that Reading have gone a bit silent on the whole issue is kind of leaning towards good news, because they've gone completely cold on the subject, and there were rumours of exclusivity agreement, and we talked last week, Wesley, didn't we, about the people pictured. Charles said he can't confirm anything to do with that because the club have gone silent. So it does point towards progress, but at the moment it's not to be taken with a pinch of salt rather than an entire packet of salt.
I'd say the chance of it happening this season are slim to none. I think we'd be lucky to see it happen before the start of next season. Hopefully they're getting in plenty of time to show us what they're made of, really.
As long as it happens at this point, I'm happy. And as long as they've got some money, just get it done.
Yeah. Well, it depends on who they are, of course.
Yeah.
Taxing Sinawatra, and don't bother.
or the Leeds guy that's facing
tax evasion.
Yeah.
Preferably a nice owner who's got the club's interest at heart, and as I said, actually has some money being the key thing.
Are there any nice billionaires? That's the next question.
Monty Burns. Anyway, so yeah, unfortunately, no real takeover news. But as I said, we'll get the very latest from Charles on the TTE podcast Extra, which will be out on Friday. And as I said, we'll discuss it here if we hear anything concrete. But that just about rounds up News Bites. So now it's time to move on to Pub Chat.
The View from the Tarhurst End. Recapping all this week's action.
Right, welcome back to Pub Chat. Not a great deal about. We've talked about some of our previous best Reading 11s and worst Reading 11s and favourite games things. So
I say last week's rattled on as well, didn't it, mate? We were talking about just the two of us being in a snappy podcast, but we could have gone on forever in the end.
No, and so, you know, we did have a couple of suggestions. One was for the most disappointing Reading 11 in relation to hype, and we've sort of covered that a little bit in the past. As I mentioned, people like
Borislav Mihailov.
Yeah, and Paul Brayson and Sean Evers and people like that. So go back and listen to that. I can't remember what it is, but listen back to all of our old podcasts. They're all great bits of gold. And by all means, feel free to then tweet us in with all of the things we've got horribly wrong.
You can get depressed over and over again.
I would love somebody to put together some sort of clips montage
of stuff we've done wrong. Yeah. I think we've gone too long. We wouldn't be able to listen to it.
Yeah, exactly. To TTE Podcast Marathon. So unfortunately, we're not going to do that one today. But the other one was that a listener suggested. It was George. He suggested that we have a look at the refereeing and the way red cards are being given out and things like that. Because obviously, as we mentioned earlier now, it's 2 in 3 games now where a defender's been sent off and given a red card for bringing someone down, had it overturned. So do you think there's a bit of confusion now for referees about what's a red card, what's just a penalty? There's been a lot of talk in the media this week about triple jeopardy on the back of the Champions League sendings off, where basically you get a player sent off, so you're down to 10 men, you give away a penalty, and then you get a suspension. Is it right to get basically punished 3 times for one mistake?
I think the problem with it, the rule changed when players were just seeing their forward run through and they're thinking, well, I might as well bring him down because I won't get sent off.
Yeah.
And that's why the rule changed, because people were basically cheating. So it made it a deterrent to not bring anyone down, because you know, one, you're going to get sent off. Two, there's probably going to get a penalty. Three, you're suspended. So that was the deterrent. But I think sometimes, again, it comes back to a sort of certain amount of video refereeing. Sometimes I think the referee needs to step away from the situation, look at it in real time. And I think you probably would have found that a couple of those, especially the red cards that we've received recently, may well have been overturned, because Pierce's one, you can't really see what happened. And when you see it in real time, it does sometimes look a lot worse than it really is. Mm-hmm. Even the one on Saturday, I mean, Drenta was clever enough to get his body in the way, and then the guy's clumsy just because he's over the top of him. Now, was it sended off? Maybe not. But it was a penalty. I thought he did lean over him. But in real time, the referee couldn't have seen that from his position, because he was the other side of the pitch.
The thing is, football is one of these sports that's very sort of stuck in its ways, and we don't really change many rules. You know, you look at the NFL, and they pretty much change a major rule every season. You look at rugby, you know, they brought in all the TMOs and the video replays and video, pretty much everything. And football is very much a sport that wants to stay the same and stay consistent. The one thing I'd want is the rest to who cares if they take 30 seconds out, speak to the linesman, say to the linesman, okay, yeah, what did you see? Was he the last man? Was it a clear goal scoring opportunity? And they sort of liaise with each other and do that, because it was QPR Leeds was on the box on Saturday, I think it was. I can't remember who was the ref.
Mm-hmm.
Linesman flagged for a corner because he thought Richard Dunne got the ball. Ref pointed straight to the spot. No, you know, obviously you don't know what they're saying over the headsets, but you'd like them to have congregate in just 20 seconds, because then at least it's a joint consensus and you can sort of see that they've tried to justify it between themselves.
The thing is that there's a fourth official sat there looking at a monitor most of the time. Now, in the Champions League game that we're talking about from the other week, I mean, I think it was the Man City one. It wasn't even a penalty. The guy was just outside the box.
Di Michaelis and Messi.
Yeah.
So if they would have stopped the game anyway, the game stopped. And by the time they've made a decision, everyone's gathered around the referee and chatted about it, you've got 30 seconds gone a minute. Haven't they? Yeah, no, but you know, you've got 30 seconds a minute gone. Now, it'd be quite easy for the fourth official to say, yeah, it's a sending off, but the foul was outside the box. And that can be sorted out like that.
But I'm not overly, that doesn't sit too easy with me, because that's almost having video refereeing by stealth. I kind of agree with Johnny that even if, you know, there's no monitors and things, just if you're even considering sending someone off, go over to the assistant referee and say, I'm thinking of giving this guy a red. Is there anything you can tell me to maybe not? And just think about it. Why do they have to go for, as I've described it, the nuclear option of just going straight for the red card and send him off? Just have a chat. Even if you're 99% convinced, just have a quick word. Chances are he'll say, I didn't really see it. Your view is better than mine. Or even same with the fourth official.
Because that was the manner of it with our two red cards that we got in two successive games, where the ref sprinted over and pulled out the red card, almost as if to build the hype, to make it dramatic. And red cards are not about building drama. They're about, you know, punishing people for making mistakes. And if it takes you, because linesman was, what, 5 yards away, 10 yards away from Gorks's one? I'm sure he would have said to the ref, right, you know, it's a yellow card, he's a little bit late, nothing more.
Right, okay, fine. I'll take this on board, what you just said, the pair of you. But if you look back at that Blackburn game away from home, the linesman was on that side, he didn't give a penalty, the referee didn't give a penalty, the ball went out of play, right? The ball went out of play anyway. So it'd be quite easy for the fourth official to say, you've missed that, that's a penalty. Right, it's a penalty. Done.
Yeah, but then
it's right.
Yeah, but then my point is, then you end up, but you end up then going back.
No one's gone back. The ball's out of play.
Yeah, but if the ball doesn't go out of play, then how long does it go on before the fourth officials? At the end, are you saying, well, you can only take that decision if the ball goes out of play or there's a stoppage? Because what happens if Brennan or Blackburn keep the ball dramatically on, pump up the other end, and score a goal?
Yeah, but then the right decision wasn't made, was it? So the right decision would have been made. We get the penalty, forget the goal. Wouldn't have happened. Shouldn't have happened because it was already...
Yeah, but if it was the other way around, it wasn't a penalty.
Well, the game ball in the back of the net before the game's been stopped anyway, so then it would have been a goal, wouldn't it?
I don't know.
So it would have made no difference.
One more. What about sin bins?
Sin bins. Good idea. Again, for something like that, where you think he's brought him down, is it a clear goal-scoring opportunity and he's ever red? Maybe not, but he has denied him a chance and I think it was a bit cheaty. Send him to the bin for 10 minutes.
A bit cheaty.
A bit cheaty.
Or do you give him a yellow if we score and a red if we don't?
Yeah, but then a player might then decide, actually, I want him to have the red card, I'm going to miss this. If that happens in the
then it comes a tactic.
Yeah, but if it happens in the first 5 minutes, chances are you're going to go, do I want to go 1-0 up against 11 men or do I want to keep it at 0-0
against 10 men? I think if a striker's over a penalty, he's failing on scoring.
Then you'd give it to the left back or right
back. He's scoring. No one's going to want to miss a penalty. I can't see that happening.
It opens up such a big can of worms.
So this is what I'm saying. The game stopped. You may as well make the right decision in the first place.
We're going well.
What if you haven't got enough cameras? What if you've only got the
one? Yeah, here we go. Yeah, what are you going to do in League Two when it's Notts County against Chesterfield?
No one's bothered about that.
I'll be there in a couple of days.
I hear this excuse all the time where I say, well, you can't do it for park football, so why can't you do it for Premier League? Because the Premier League's worth billions of pounds. For park football,
also though, Westy, again, I mean, some of these decisions are down to interpretation, though, aren't they? And if you go to a video referee, say it is the fourth official, who's down in between the two technical areas, and he's got managers screaming at him, the crowd screaming at him, is he really going to be able to make that split-second decision?
Put him in his own little studio with a committee.
But then you're stopping...
Half hour later.
You're stopping the game.
You may award the penalty.
Yeah, exactly. But you're stopping the game, and for me, but... I don't know. Something does need to be done to clarify this, because... Or at least FIFA need to give referees the scope to interpret the law differently. As I said, if you think, oh, he's still on goal, he's brought him down, it's definitely a penalty... And he does need to be punished because he's brought him down. But I think it's more clumsy than a deliberate professional foul. That's why you should give him the booking. You shouldn't give him the red card just because he's brought a guy through that's through on goal.
Yeah, but the problem is, Wim, what happens then is the next week when it happens to Reading and we're biased about it and it looks like a clumsy tackle that he gets a red card for or vice versa, we'll be still debating it then. We won't know any difference to that. I suppose the referees are thinking, if there's a foul in the box, it looks like he's going to score, it's red card no matter what. And I think a lot of people say, well, we want consistency. That's consistent, you know what I mean? Either that, or you say, well, that maybe not be a foul, this one might not be a foul. I think if you foul someone when they're running for on goal, everyone knows the rules. If it's clumsy, then don't be clumsy. Simple as that. Alex Pierce.
This goes out to you, Alex.
Tricky, because it's very difficult to referee a football match. We all think we can referee a football match. Try doing it. It's not easy. When you're sat in the stands, you can see the whole pitch. When you're a referee, the game's going on around you. And it's very difficult to see everything that happens. And I know what you're saying about maybe the linesman should be able to help, but sometimes they're miles away from it as well. I think the referee on Saturday gave us a penalty as well, but I don't know whether he could see any more than the referee, really. Far away.
All I'm saying is you'd want them to have a chat and see, see if the linesman... Because there's no way that in that 2 seconds or 5 seconds between giving the... You know, giving the free kick and bringing out the red card, he says to the linesman, "All right, was he the last man? Is it, you know, can I send him the red card?" And the linesman goes back to him, "Yep, no, that's definitely a red card." There's no way that that conversation happens.
No, but it's very difficult to see it even for four eyes. Real time.
Yeah,
what
I'm saying is they should at least have that 15-30 second conversation.
Yeah, maybe.
Just so even as fans, you can see that the referee and the linesman have sort of congregated and tried to come to the same
conclusion. I take your point, but how many times, I'll ask you two a question, maybe it's a bit off point, but when you've sat and watched a football match in real time, right, and then you thought, ooh, that's a nasty one, and then you've watched a replay and thought, he's miles away from him, he's dived a good 2 inches away from where his foot is. Now, teams get penalties, free kicks and players sent off for that. And I think that could be stamped out because the referee has already blown the whistle and said, right, that's a free kick. You either get sent off or it's a penalty. Now, all he's got to do to the fourth official say, look, if it's controversial, I'm giving my decision. So what do you think? And if he says he hasn't touched him, he's gone over easy, he'll cut out diving left, right and centre because you couldn't do it.
And in an ideal world, if they have all the technology and they have a good panel and it can be done quickly and efficiently, agreed. But how many times do you see, sat, you know, watching Match of the Day or a Sky Sports News or whatever, and they have to show it 20, 30 times and you've got a different panel and every one of them saying something completely different.
And they do the whole rotate it around 90 degrees.
Yeah, I get your point, but CGI. What I'm saying to you is if there's any sort of controversy, then it's referee's decision's final. If he's give it, then fine, it's still given. Mm. But there's some that are blatantly not. And you think to yourself, even that Champions League game, in real time, I thought it was a penalty.
Yeah.
The replay showed you it wasn't. So they should have said, right, you're off, but it's a free kick. And then you might have had a different outcome in that game. You might have ended up 1-0 and they'd still be in the tie.
I think we're sort of broadly on the same page. I think what we all want now is for referees, be it if you want to go to video referee or the fourth official, or I think as me and Johnny are saying, go to the linesman. We just don't want referees going straight for making game-changing decisions without at least consulting somebody about it. Because it ruins games. Absolutely ruins games.
Because refs get adrenaline as much as players or whatever. Because, you know, they are...
Especially with 20,000 people screaming.
Exactly. When everyone's screaming obscenities at you, obviously that's going to sort of cloud your judgment, cloud your mind. And when you see something like that, when you hear 18,000 people roar at you for baying for blood, you know, you're going to react to it. Obviously you're going to.
Okay, well, plenty of points here to discuss and we'll open it up to the listeners. What do you think? Do you agree, Wes? Do you think there should be... sort of a video panel or a monitor? Do you agree with me and Johnny that every red card should be a mandatory talk with a lino? Or do you just think They just need better guidelines and better refs.
I would like to see up on the electric scoreboard, you know, the animations where you have a ref sort of blowing a whistle, red card.
I remember on the early days of the Medici Stadium, before they had the video board, they used to have that little ref come up with
the clapping hands.
You see, what would be brilliant, because they don't do it in matches, where you've got these monitors, I'd love them to show the incidents, because I think it'd cause so much furore in the crowd. Oh, it'd be brilliant, wouldn't it?
That's the whole point.
And the referee knows he's got it wrong, and think, oh, I'm trying to level this up. That'd be excellent.
Indeed. Right, as I said, let us know what you think. You can tweet us into at the Tarlest End. You can send an email to thetarlestend@gmail.com or leave a comment on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/thetarlestend. Plenty of ways to get in touch, as these people have done.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
Right, time for some of your tweets and emails, and thanks very much to everyone who's got in touch. Very much appreciated, and we try and read out all that we can. Right, a few ones about the Yeovil game. Steve Bentley says, good start, awful defending for the goal, dreadful pass around the back in the middle of the game. Jonathan changed things lively at the end. Anthony Kendrick says, judging by that performance, seems that even in March, it's not too early to use the players already on holiday cliche. And Chris Barnum says, the team that won at the QPR obviously were replaced by alien pod people. They look the same until they step on the Mad Stad turf. And Daniel Roy McKay says, actually embarrassed we couldn't work out how to play the ball on the floor. After the 800th cross, do you think they'd get it? And finally, on the Yeovil game, Jonathan Russell, angriest I've ever been in 20 years watching us. How thick are our players not to just play the ball on the ground to the spare man?
The thing is, and you know, I'm probably guilty of this as well, but this is such sort of short-termism, because a month ago we were beating Blackpool 6-1 and we were beating Bolton 7-1, and now, you know, one bad result, admittedly an absolutely horrendous result, but suddenly we can't play the ball on the floor, etc. You know, for that game we couldn't play the ball on the floor, and for whatever the tactics didn't work, but I'd still have a bit of faith in the team.
Yeah, I think what annoys people is the massive inconsistency in Reading. You go and win a couple of games, hammer teams, and you knew that was unrealistic because we hadn't shown that all season, really. It was going to really batter someone. And then you play against these low lights that we've talked about all season, and Reading are either struggling to get results or grabbing draws against teams of eight men in the bottom of the league. And I think that upsets people, because you think, well, if you can go to QPR and play them off the pitch to a certain extent, why can't you play Yeovil at home and turn them over?
And what we want to see, I think what fans want to see, is they want to see a flexible Reading side. They don't want to see a Reading side that's just so committed to passing around the back. And likewise, they don't want to see a Reading team that's committed to pumping the ball up.
No.
They need to, as we said earlier, show some brains, judge the match situation, and change your tactics accordingly.
But that's the thing, because I put it in my match report as well, but there was one moment where, sort of about 70 minutes in, McCarthy played it out to Jordan Nabita, and by then we were playing it out from the back. Jordan Nabita looked up, he put his hands up as if to say, what am I going to do here? And then he just pumped it down the line, and they cleared it straight away, they got the ball back. It's just, there doesn't seem to be any sort of changing of the tactics in the middle of the game. I mean, I was watching it with my dad, and about 60 minutes in, there was a massive space in the middle of the park. An absolutely huge space, because you have the two central midfielders sitting deep, you have the two wingers as wide as possible. I mean, McCleary was, when we had the ball on the left-hand side, McCleary was literally on the touchline.
He was on the touchline.
And then you had the two strikers. There was no one dropping into that space, which is essentially a square between the two wingers, the two defensive midfielders and the two strikers.
Yeah, well, they were trying to stretch the play, weren't they? They were trying to make them come out.
I think Adkins said as much on Barks.
Yeah.
But there was, you know, there was still a massive gap. Just play it to someone in there. He can have a run at the defence. But bring McCleary in there, if anyone, you know.
As I said, they just need to show a bit more intelligence on the pitch. And hopefully they get that through the experience of this. Hopefully the one good thing to come out of games like this is they think to themselves and watch it back and go, yeah, I should have taken some more time. I should have thought things through. So
hopefully they don't think, well, we can't beat 8-man Yeovil.
Let's go on holiday now.
We didn't lose, I suppose, is one good point about it.
I mean, in one of the points,
we didn't score.
No.
Yeah,
we didn't score.
No. Anthony Kendrick talked about the players are in the holiday cliche. One of the thoughts I had was, do you maybe think, and again, I might just be wildly speculating, that maybe some of these players have seen some of the interest that was in them around the end of January, and as we've talked about with Charles, know that their players are coming up. And do you think maybe that there's any hint of them easing up a little bit?
No, I don't think so. I just think it was a poor performance. And again, I don't think Reading can break teams down when they sit in against us, and that's been proved pretty much all season. So I don't think anyone's got their heads turned. I think a lot of them have struggled to get out of the club, to be honest, because they haven't really shown too much, have they, during the season?
We haven't got the strikers that can play against that sort of style of play, because Pod can't win a header.
No.
And Alfie.
Alfie can't win a header.
No, Alfie can't win. If he's got four men around him, he can't do anything. He's about dropping off the last man, getting in behind and making those runs.
This is what I've said to you all season. There's no one up front for Reading that can stretch the play. There's no one who's that ball over the top. There's no one who can run at players. They're very much one-dimensional. Pod Grebniak, right, he can control the ball and lay it off. Mm. Lafondre should score goals when he gets decent opportunities. But other than that, they don't offer you very much.
I mean, I see, if you're going to cross it into the box, do it in at chest height rather than head height.
There's no point
in 6 foot sometimes. 4 height, because Pog's only, what, 6 foot?
Yeah, and there's no one to stretch him, and then there's no ball over top, so teams can play a little bit deep against us now, and there's no one going to be, well, a little bit high against us, push us all up, and we haven't got anyone who's going to break that back four.
No, unfortunately not. Right, moving on to a few more general issues at the club. Evan Collins, a regular tweeter to us, so thanks for getting in touch again, Evan. He says, Championship is a big step up from the under-21s, but do you think Craig Tanner could have a part to play for the first team this season? And Matt Smith, on a similar note, says, can we expect Nigel Atkins to blood any of these decent under-21s if a playoff spot goes begging in the next few weeks?
I think we will. Maybe not Craig Tanner. I think he might get sort of 10 minutes at the end of the game, but I can certainly see people like Jake Taylor, people like Michael Hector starting games and, you know, certainly giving them a proper run out and seeing what they can do. Because we've only really seen Jake Taylor in that 60 minutes against Millwall, and he coped all right. We've only seen Hector 10 minutes at the end of games when we've got him in the bag as well.
Yeah, I realistically, if they was out of contention with 5 games to go, then yeah, you probably want to have a look at them. I don't think we'll be out of contention with 5 games to go. I think we'll be pretty much in or near it all the way up to the end of the season. Yeah, I think we might be chasing it, yeah. So if we are, no, it won't happen.
I think he will start playing them, but I said it's going to be very much linked to if we're in contention or not. And again, you don't want to blood them too early and have them, you know, have bad experiences and, you know, get kicked off the park or get really overpowered. You know, you might just want to say, let them go through to the summer, having had a good year with the under-21s and get them in training with the first team properly over the summer.
Pre-season,
because as I said, it can be damaging for a player's confidence. Look at what happened to Sean Cumins when Sean Cumins was just thrown into that team under Brendan Rodgers and just got, you know, ripped apart. And it took him a good year to come back from that. So you've got to be time. I know we see them have these great results and, you know, we see them do great things on the pitch. And we really want to get them playing, but sometimes you've got to take the long-term view.
They're not in general playing against experienced professional footballers either. I mean, that's another thing you have to take note of. I mean, a lot of them have got good character, good ability, and they're obviously very good players. But when you play in the first team, it is a hell of a lot different to playing under-21s level.
Absolutely. Right. Joe Stevenson on this, and I want to get your thoughts on this. Joe Stevenson, how long does the pod think it will be until we see Atkins not a player? This is obviously in the wake of former Reading manager, who we were praising last week as one of the most influential managers in Reading history, Alan Pardew. He pushed him away with his head, David Myler.
Yeah.
Didn't headbutt him.
No, he's a push away.
And looks like he's going to be facing some ban and £100,000 fine.
I think it's slightly a touch of the old Martin Allen influence from earlier in his career that the old Mad Dog used to be doing up to his antics. But Pardew's always been quite passionate. I think Arsene Wenger know that as well after that little schoolboy spat they had in the...
Didn't Pardew get banned for pushing a ref or so didn't do something?
No, I think there was something with a lino.
Yeah, lino.
Wenger. Now he's said, but a player.
He's passionate, yeah.
That's what people pay to see him. I don't think
Atkins is quite like that. I don't think we'll likely see Nigel Atkins do it anytime soon.
I think he'll obviously one of the players, not Atkins. But no, I don't think so.
I'd like to see Coppell or McDermott get that involved. That would have been fun.
Yeah, maybe we should decide this influential managers debate with a massive Royal Rumble. But just speaking of Atkins, one of the comments that my dad made to me going back from the game is that Atkins almost seems to hide a bit in the dugout. I mean, you sit right by him in the West Stand. Do you think he's out on the touchline enough?
Well, Andy Crosby's always there. He's always out on, you know, on the edge of the pitch, directing play, etc. It's sort of like when we had who was it? Was it Coppell, Downs, and
Dylan?
And you had Wally Downs who was directing the defence, and you had Dylan who, to an extent, was doing the attack. You know, I don't know what capacity they work in. I think Atkins is sort of out there when the going gets tough or when he's needed. But, you know, you look back to Steve Coppell. I mean, he would always spend the entire first half basically sitting next to John Badeski unless we went 1-0 down, at which point he would hot-foot it down to the down to the touchline. And, you know, that was arguably the best season of our history.
I think it's one of those things people point out when you're losing and no one notices when you're winning. Like I say, Coppell used to sit in the stand for the whole of the first half, and I always think that is the best position for anyone to see the whole match and be able to pick fault in whatever's going on.
Well, you look at rugby and all of their coaches sit in the
With about 20 laptops around him.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they've got people analysing everything. But, you know, Stuart Lancaster, he never comes down to the touchline when things are getting bad. He just sits up there and phones it down to the touchline. I mean, you know, as we said, like when we were talking about referees, we can see things far better from our viewpoints than referees can, and I think it's exactly the same for managers.
The funny thing is with Koppel, obviously it wasn't his character to be shouting about on a touchline. I mean, a lot of players we've had on here and players I've spoke to in the past have said that he just has to have a quiet word with you. He says very rarely did you see him lose his temper, except for Murty telling me once that he chucked a teacup. You know, I mean, apart from that, it was such a shock to him because it never happened. So he had people around him in Downs and Dillon that were that bigger sort of character. So I think it worked well that way. Atkins and Crosby have worked together for a long time, I'm sure. They've got a good understanding between them. I don't think this is the way he manages, and that's fair enough. Because I would say about Atkins, if you watch when the players come off the pitch, he will always stand on the touchline and shake them by the hand and clap them off the pitch.
Yeah.
Well, you don't see a lot of managers do that. Sometimes look at them with disdain and they go and sit down and cop the ump.
Yeah, fair enough. Again, said if you've got thoughts on Atkins' style, tweet us in. A couple of final tweets then. Nick Beckett says the only good thing at Saturday's match was the West Berkshire Brewery Ale.
That was an absolute triumph.
Yeah,
very nice. Yeah, they sold out of Good Old Boy in about 25 minutes.
Gets the Westie seal of approval.
I like a bit of real ale, so yeah, well done. The thing is, I don't know why they don't do that every week. I don't know why they don't do that every week, because there's the opportunity then for the Yeovil fans and the Reading fans
to mix in together
and have a beer, because apart from the jazz club, which I go to, and in the concourse, there's no other opportunity to have a drink. And especially this time of year, when it's summertime, I think that was a great idea, and I think you might see that come back, because it was very successful.
Yeah, hopefully.
It's in your brewery. The West Berkshire Beer.
No, unfortunately, no.
You haven't got a stake in it.
Otherwise, it would be there every week.
Yeah, and West Berkshire Brewery, you can send your contribution for that advertising to the title.
Yes.
No, good. Anything that I said increases the atmosphere and say it keeps fans happy. I'm all for it.
I'll tell you one good thing that happened at the game. About 25 minutes in, when I think it was that big striker Moore, he ripped his shorts and had to come over change his shorts.
Well, I don't know why you picked that out as a highlight.
I'm surprised it's not your champagne moment.
I think that'll have to do. I think Johnny's picked it, but I might make it quite clear it was Johnny's champagne moment.
Okay,
and not
we'll save your champagne moment for any other business. Nick Beckett went on to say, it's time Federici was given a chance. McCarthy's made one too many mistakes recently, and I think we covered the McCarthy.
Yeah, we did cover that. He has made a few mistakes recently, but to be fair to him, he's made some good saves at times as well. Well, and he had a lot to do, really.
Yeah, and we've had one final tweet in. Just beat the deadline.
Wow.
From D. Collins, 75, saying, if we didn't have a chairman who was focusing on future ownership of the club, would Atkins still be manager? Now, I kind of joked, but Reading can't actually probably afford to sack Nigel Atkins at the moment.
No, they can't afford to sack him. And how can you sack him when he was sixth, pretty much. We've been in the top six all season, pretty much.
He's done his job.
I just don't think he's got the personnel to play the way he wants, and that might take a little while. And again, he's not got his own players.
Yeah, I'm all for Nigel Atkins' management at the club. I do think he's made mistakes, and I think we've discussed this quite a few times this season. I think certain situations you can say he's got it wrong, but ultimately he's not had the chance to build a team in his own image.
No, and that might take a long time.
Do you think there's any chance he could walk this summer?
He might do. Again, he must have been promised stuff he certainly hasn't had, and I'm not convinced the players that we've signed were his signing, so... I'm surprised if he was happy at the club at the moment, although he will say he is, obviously. He hasn't had a chance to build his own side. He must have been promised stuff that he hasn't got. I'd be disappointed for him as well, because this would be a blip on his CV, because other than this, he's been very successful.
For someone that, you know, excites the fans and certainly looks okay when he comes on, certainly for 10 minutes, Atkins is very loath to play Drenta. And, you know, we've seen games where he hasn't even been in the squad, hasn't even been in the 18 men, sorry. So, there are certain extent there. A few problems with the squad, but you know he's doing the best with what he can, and I don't think anyone else would be doing as well as or better than him.
Like I say, there's no way he signed Drenta. No way.
No, he didn't. No,
in a million. Even Bridger.
I think Charles come on and said that's 100% an Anton signing.
Even Williams, I'm not convinced he signed him. You know what I mean? I think all them players were bought in for him, and I think he was promised stuff that he hasn't got. So if he was to walk, could you blame him?
I wouldn't know.
Would you?
I don't think he would walk.
You could see someone like a West Brom, if they get relegated, and obviously I'd imagine they'd been off Pepe Mel, you could quite easily see someone like a West Brom or even a Cardiff, someone like that coming in.
I mean, we talked about it last week when we said that if he stays here for next year and things are going the way they are, we don't come out of this division, players will leave. He'd be left with a lot of players that are on big wages that are trying to get out of the club, and obviously the heart won't be in it. You'll have to blood a lot of youngsters. And again, if we slip down that league, if we end up sort of 12th next year, he will get the sack. Simple as that.
Yeah, Fair enough. Right, that just about wraps up emails. So let's move on to any other business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any other business.
Right, welcome back to Any Other Business. Westy, just before we move on to previous 2 weeks' games, just want to confirm your champagne moment for this week. Are you going for the good old boy, or are you going for Johnny's pants moment?
Pants day.
I'm going for the good old boy, unfortunately, because I think it did sell out in about 30 minutes, and it is a nice tipple. I've had it before myself.
Lovely stuff.
Yeah. So that was my real ale moment.
That goes along with Johnny selling out on the pitch.
Yep.
And I can't remember what the champagne moment was last week for the Blackburn game.
I think we missed it. Because we were still disappointed.
Probably.
Yeah.
The champagne moment was a lack of champagne moment.
Although I did hear a guy in a pub the other day. I want to run this past you, actually. A guy in a pub was talking to his mate. And he said...
Do I need to put this in a pre-edit?
No, this is a genuine question he asked his mate. And I thought it sounded stupid, but maybe it's just because I'm wrong. He said to his mate, he said, "Do you know anybody who looks like their passport photo?" I know what he was getting at. I think he was saying you don't look like it because it could be quite old. But everyone
I know. I look like mine, but I hate them. I hate it. I hate my passport photo. I think the question is, does anyone ever look good in their passport photo?
Yeah, but that's not what he said. He said, do you know anyone who looks like a passport photo? I think I do know lots of people. But
answers
maybe it's just
me. To the Tarlhurst End. thetarlhurstend@gmail.com to see whether you agree or disagree with the bloke down the pub.
Idiot.
Anyway, say it like you mean it. Anyway, before we wrap up this podcast, we've got two games to preview because Reading will play Brighton on Saturday and then go to Leeds on Tuesday. We'll probably be recording Tuesday or Wednesday night, so we won't get a chance to discuss that. Thoughts? Brighton. Let's start with Brighton then. Good team. Probably our biggest rival along with Wigan for that final playoff spot. Any hope for Reading repeating their dramatic win at the Amex 2 years ago?
Oh, yeah. Again, you never know with Reading. I can't see why not. I think if we put in a performance, we were as good as them. I thought the first game we played against them this year, we probably should have lost. We got lucky with it being levelled up rather quickly after they'd scored. Mm. They're a good side. They've picked up quite a bit recently. And again, they'll be gunning for Reading because they know that this is an opportunity for them to push themselves into the playoffs. Yeah.
They're a tight side, Brighton. They don't score a lot. They haven't actually scored two goals in a game in 2014 in the league. But they're also quite good at keeping clean sheets. I think they've kept 3 in their last 4, you know, 4 in their last 6. And, you know, it's a lot of 1-0s, 1-alls, wins in that space. So, again, as we've said all season, with Reading, the first goal is going to be key in that game because they get a goal in front. And I think
Reading crumble as usual. Yeah.
Well, no, they haven't lost.
We haven't lost
ahead.
When we conceded first. We haven't lost when we scored first. We've lost a lot when we conceded.
So again, the first goal is just going to be very key. I don't see any reason why
there is a goal.
If there is a goal,
I don't see any reason why Reading can't go there and win. Because as we've said,
they could go anywhere.
Brighton will come at Reading, and that suits us down to the ground.
This is going
to
be a dour 0-0, an absolutely dire 0-0.
Westy,
I'm going to predict a defeat because at least it might go the other way then. So I think we get beat 2-1.
I'm going to stay optimistic and say we'll win 1-0.
Okay, well,
what happens now then? That's one draw, one loss, one win.
There's going to be match abandoned.
Okay.
2-2.
But it's a tricky game because I think they're a good side. So, like I said, the key is the first goal and we know what happens if we don't get it.
Absolutely. And then from there, we roll on to Elland Road to face Brian McDermott's Leeds side. Surely the rule of the X is going to ruin us, especially now that they've signed Jimmy Kebbe and Connor Wickham, who's also in Reading's academy as well.
Yeah,
signed on loan.
We talked a little bit about... ex-player scoring against us this year and see if we could get 11-man squad out of it, and if Kebbe manages to get well and Noel Hunt, I think we'll be pushing up towards the 8 mark, so it might well happen. Leeds, I thought that was a good game down here early in the season. Not a great game, but it was exciting at the end anyway. I think Leeds are a side that can see goals, so I can see goals in it. I just hope we can get the better of them, because my mate who listens to this show is a Leeds fan. I know he'll be listening now, so we will stuff them.
Yeah, there are 4 away games in a row, just looking at the recent results. I mean, they got Bolton on Saturday at home and then Reading at home. It's a tricky one because Leeds aren't the most consistent side, and you know, you can certainly, I think you can see any of 3 results, to be honest. I think we'll nullify Kebbe. I don't think I've seen him a couple of times. I don't think he's the same player since he's gone back to Leeds. I think he's one of those who's sort of waiting for his paycheck. Now, Noel Hunt, we know all about. Ross McCormack.
He's the man, isn't he? That's
best player in Championship.
If Gorks and Pearce can stop him, then... Well, when they don't, I mean,
they're going to win the league.
Not too many, yeah. again, he's the threat. He's a good player, and I don't think you'll see him there next year.
Yeah, they've got a frightening front line. I said when you put people like Kebbe, McCormack, and Wickham in it, but it seems that they can't really get, a bit like Reading actually, they can't get the service to them. And again, like Brighton, they're not a team that scores more than one goal very often. I think, you know, they stuffed Huddersfield 5-1 and they snuck a 2-1 win at Yeovil, but that's the only time they've scored two goals since, you got to go back to the middle of December against Doncaster. So,
looking at that, they've had an horrendous run, really. I mean, they've got two wins more recently, but before that, it was a lot of draws and defeats.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why one of the reasons why, you know, people said, well, Brian McDermott got sacked. Obviously, it was all to do with the ownership as well, but they weren't on a good run. And I said, I watched them get stuffed 6-0 at Sheffield Wednesday, and they were woeful that day.
Also, I think that Huddersfield game was the game he wasn't there for, so really, he's only had one win in the last, what, 12?
Maybe should get Nigel Gibbs in, I think.
Yeah, maybe they should.
Gibbs in. Again, it's a game, I think if Reading score first, I think they'll go on to win it. But, I mean, what do you think? Score predictions?
I think we will win it. I'm going to say, I think we concede. So 2-1 Reading.
I'll say 1-1.
I'm going to say 1-1.
Two draws then, Johnny.
We haven't all predicted wins, guys, so you can no longer blame this podcast for Reading's woes.
We've done that on purpose.
We have. We have, absolutely. So that just about rounds up our thoughts for the week ahead. Just a couple of bits of housekeeping before we go. As I said, you can check out the Tyler Stem podcast extra on Friday. Well, I'll be sitting down to chat to Charles Watts and get all the latest team news ahead of the week and any other latest news around the club. Also, please check out the Tyler Stem's website. It's at thetylerstem.com. Loads of content on there. Some really good pieces gone up over the past couple of weeks. You can read Johnny's piece on what happens to Reading when they score first and concede first. You can read our debate on safe standing and lots of other great bits and pieces. So, as I said, thetylerstem.com will get you there. And as I said, plenty of times on the show, please get in touch with us at thetylerstem@gmail.com. If you want to contribute to the site, or if you've got an idea for pub chat or anything, please get in touch. We're on Twitter at thetylerstem, facebook.com/tylerstem. We've got threads on the Rules Rendezvous and on Hobnob Anybody. So, Hobnob Anybody, it's Hobnob Anyone. Every week I say Hobnob Anybody.
HNA.
HNA, question mark.
Hobnob.
Indeed.
Close enough is good enough.
Indeed. And that just about wraps up from us. As I said, we'll probably be recording on Wednesday next week, I'd imagine, because I don't want to be right in the middle of a game. Johnny will be at Cheltenham.
Oh,
for Johnny's betting advice.
Yeah, it's my birthday next week as well.
Oh, many happy returns.
Yeah, well, we'll see. If Reading can win, I'll be happy.
Indeed. And on that note, we bid you goodbye. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll speak to you next week.
The Tylehurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.